Hi, this is Andrew Phillips. Thank you for downloading the Graymere Church of Christ Sermon Podcast. If you have any questions or if you'd like to contact us, check out our website at graymere.com. We'd also love for you to visit with us in a worship service. You're always welcome at the Graymere Church of Christ.
Oh, how great would it be? Great, I don't know if great's necessarily the word. How interesting would it be if there was a statue of yourself? Have you ever thought about that? What it might feel like to look up at a statue and to see yourself in the statue? By the way, I don't think my clicker is clicking. You want to go to the first slide? One, yeah, this one's good. That's a good slide too. Have you ever thought about what it is like if you had a statue of yourself, what it would feel like to have a statue of yourself, what it would feel like to walk up to that statue or whatever else? Let's talk about a few statues that you probably have seen before. So here's one. You've got the Lincoln Memorial. It's in Washington, D.C. Probably the majority of you here have at some point probably seen the Lincoln Memorial. Built in 1920, it's 80 feet tall. Here's a Buddha monument that is in Thailand, built in 2014, 148 feet tall. So you think almost twice the height of the Lincoln Memorial. And if you've been there, you know how extremely big that it is. This is one of my favorite statues maybe of all time. Believe it or not, this is George Washington. Someone decided to make a statue of George. This is in Washington, D.C. at the National Museum there. And they decided to make him, for whatever reason, look like he were some kind of Greek god with sandals and a toga on. George Washington. And we would be absolutely remiss if we did not mention the late, great Stevie Ray Vaughan and Texas Flood whenever we were talking about statues. This statue is located in Austin, Texas, built in 1993. And this one of Elvis, Tupelo, Mississippi. And last, we have the Great Sphinx. The Great Sphinx, which is made completely of limestone. It's in Giza, Egypt. And it is 66 feet tall and some 300 feet long. So you think about the length of a football field. That is how big this thing is. Egypt, of course, was known for their great statues, their great monuments, their great pyramids that they would make of people, for people, all of these kind of things, whether they were for burial or just for monumental purposes. They were known for that. But there is somebody who lived in Egypt that did not receive a sphinx. Somebody lived in Egypt that did not receive a pyramid or any kind of statue whatsoever. And that's Moses. And so we want to turn our attention to him for just a little bit because he didn't receive the earthly recognition that he deserved. He received, of course, spiritual recognition and eternal recognition, but he didn't receive that earthly recognition. Moses grew up as a great and powerful man in the land of Egypt. Of course, he wasn't born an Egyptian. He was born, as we all know the story, to Hebrew parents. But then as Pharaoh was trying to control the population of the Israelites, of the Hebrew people, he put out an ordinance that all baby boys could be killed because their numbers were getting so great. He was afraid they were going to overthrow the government. So he said, well, we'll control the numbers and we'll just kill all the baby boys. So, of course, Moses' mother put him in the Nile to be found by Pharaoh's daughter. Pharaoh's daughter who raised him up. And what he would have had, you think, if you're raised in Pharaoh's household, the king of the nation, what are you going to have? I mean, you would think the best of everything, the best home, the nicest home you could have, the nicest clothes that Egypt could afford, all the food you would ever need, the best schooling, and Egypt was known for their world-renowned schools in this time. He would have been the smartest man around. the greatest opportunities would have been afforded to him. And it's very likely he would have been the next in line, or one of the next in line, to be Pharaoh after Pharaoh was gone. So where are the great monuments for? For Moses. Why don't we see a huge pyramid dedicated to him, or maybe a huge sphinx with a big Moses head on it, or a statue just commemorating how great he was? We don't see those things. In fact, we actually see the opposite, to where Egypt did their absolute best to erase the memory of Moses completely from their entire history, because they were so ashamed of what Moses had done in their nation. But the answer we're looking for is ingrained in the scripture, into God's memorial that we find for Moses. We find that in Hebrews 11. If you want to turn there, we're going to spend a decent amount of time there in just a few verses. But because of the decisions that he made, that Moses made, he was erased from Egyptian history. Now we're going to look at three of those decisions and see what we can learn from those decisions. First, let's read Hebrews 11, 24 through 26. By faith, Moses, when he was grown up, refused to be called the son of Pharaoh's daughter, choosing rather to be mistreated with the people of God than to enjoy the fleeting pleasures of sin. He considered the reproach of Christ greater wealth than the treasures of Egypt, for he was looking to the reward. Decision point number one. Moses refused to sustain the sinful. It says in these verses that he refused to be called the son of Pharaoh's daughter. And I love to kind of reenact scripture in my brain as I read it. I try to visualize it. And I've always wondered, how did this come about? I mean, was it like an exact conversation that maybe Moses had been really, I mean, pressing on him for a long time? So he called together a family meeting and he says, guys, you know, I've been thinking a lot about this, and I'd just rather not be called your son anymore. I'd rather, if I could have my way, I'd rather just not be called your grandson anymore. You got to thank his parents or grandparents. That would probably hurt, even if you know, it was a child that you had just taken care of from birth. That would hurt, right? Or maybe it was an outburst. That this had bulled inside of him for so long, and his mother looks over and says something about son, or someone says, yeah, aren't you Pharaoh's daughter's son? And he bursts out and he says, that's not who I am. I'm a Hebrew man. I'm not her son. I'm not his grandson. One thing was clear. We don't understand all that was going on here, but we can see that he wanted to be disconnected with the Pharaoh's family for reasons of sinfulness, of impurity. He didn't want to be connected to that family. He couldn't. He refused to be connected to Pharaoh's family. It says he considered the reproach far greater, the reproach that he would receive far greater than being part of the highest person in the entire country's family. It says he considered the riches of Egypt less than the reward he would receive from God. There's no sphinx for Moses in Egypt, because Moses refused to sustain the sinful. He's forgotten completely in Egypt, but greatly honored in heaven. In today's world, just like Jonathan talked about this morning, it is not always easy, it is not always popular to stand up against sinfulness in our culture. But I would like to tell you that it is important, it is more important than it has ever been now, today, to stand up to sinfulness. To let people know that, hey, I will not be a part of sin. I'm going to separate myself and I'm going to stance myself from sin, because God needs me to be pure, to be in His service. Moses and all his imperfections, Moses understood that. If God is going to use me, I need to be pure so that I can be a vessel for Him. Discussion point number two. Moses left the familiar. Hebrews 11:27. That says, by faith he left Egypt, not being afraid of the anger of the king, for he endured as seeing him who is invisible. Have you ever been comfortable in a place before? Maybe, you know, I know in a small town like this, a lot of times you're born in Columbia, Tennessee. I would say probably the very high majority of the people in this auditorium right now were born here in Columbia, Tennessee, and have probably spent the high majority of their lives right here in Columbia, Tennessee, and will probably die right here in Columbia, Tennessee. There's something about that comfort of your own hometown. I'm from Lawrenceburg, Tennessee, and even though I haven't lived there, in fact, I've probably nearly lived away from that town as long as I lived in that town, at least in a cognizant part of my life. And yet it's still home. Right? It's comfortable. Or maybe you think about like whenever you were in college, or maybe the military, or for a number of years, and those things become comfortable to you. Or maybe you had a job that you were very comfortable with and comfortable at, and you enjoyed being there. I think about college and the times when I was there, and I've still got some friends who were there, or some acquaintances who are there now, and I'll hear stories every once in a while that I'm a part of hey, we've heard about when this happened whenever you were in college, and you were a part of that. You were there for that, weren't you? And it's a thing of comfort. It's a place of comfort. The places we went, the things that we did. Sometimes you can stay somewhere so long or have such an impact in a certain place that you almost permeate the walls of that place long after you're gone. Places sometimes are comfortable to us. What if you felt the call of God to leave? Would you listen to it? Would you listen to God's call if you thought God was calling you to go somewhere, to do something, to work for Him? Would you do it, or would you maybe ignore it because it was uncomfortable? Let's read Exodus chapter 2. I'll read verses 15 through 22. When Pharaoh heard of it, and this is talking about whenever Pharaoh heard that Moses had killed an Egyptian man, because the Egyptian man was beating a Hebrew slave. You guys remember the story. Verse 15, when Pharaoh heard of it, he sought to kill Moses. But Moses fled from Pharaoh and stayed in the land of Midian. And he sat down by a well. Now the priest of Midian had seven daughters, and they came and drew water and filled the troughs to water their father's flock. The shepherds came and drove them away. But Moses stood up and saved them and watered their flock. When they came home to their father, Reuel, he said, "How is it that you've come home so early today?" They said, "An Egyptian delivered us out of the hand of the shepherds and even drew water for us and watered the flock." He said to his daughters, "Then where is he? Why have you left the man? Call him, that he may eat bread." And Moses was content to dwell with the man. And he gave Moses his daughter Zipporah. She gave birth to a son, and he called his name Gershom, for he said, "I have been a sojourner in a foreign land." You see, we get comfortable, but Moses knew that I have to be willing to leave those things that are comfortable to me. See, Moses was comfortable when he was in Egypt. He had all the things that he needed. Everything was provided for him. And then he left that. And then even whenever he was in the desert of Midian, it talks about here in this passage, he had a family. He had a wife. He had a son. We know he had a job. He was a shepherd. He had a lot of good things going for him. But he had to be willing to leave those things that are familiar to him. Leave those things behind to do God's work. Sometimes we're going to be asked to do uncomfortable things. There's no Sphinx for Moses in Egypt because Moses was more committed to God's plan than to his own plan. If you're more concerned about your own plan than God's, you're not committed to it. I think we can all think about, from this point forward in my life, how, if I had it my way, how would life go? What would life look like? And I can think back, you know, as we've got the youth group in here tonight, and I can think back to being their age and how I expected my life to go. And it has not worked. I will tell you that. I have great blessings in my life, and I have a great life. But it's gone very different than what I expected in so many different ways. Some for the far greater reasons, and some for far worse reasons. Whose plan do we want to work more in our life? Is it our plan? Is it what we want to happen? The things that I want to accomplish, the goals that I have for my life, or are we okay with setting those things aside and saying, you know, I envision myself being the next Pharaoh of Egypt, and yet here I am being a lowly shepherd in the desert. Are we okay setting our success to the side at times? Our goals, our wants, our dreams to the side at times? Because we say, God, I don't know why right now. I don't know why I'm a shepherd in Midian, in the desert. But I know there must be a good reason why I'm not living a life of luxury right now. Because I've tried my best to follow you, and I know you must be getting me ready to do something. Whose plan is more important? Moses left the familiar. Point number three. Moses did the unusual. Hebrews 11:28, let's read that. By faith, he kept the Passover and sprinkled the blood so that the destroyer of the firstborn might not touch them. And this may sound oddly less than unusual to us, and part of that is probably because sometimes we read things over and over again, and we're so familiar with a certain idea that the symbolism almost loses connection with us. I mean, we think about this whenever we meet together every Sunday to do what? To eat bread and drink juice? Or to eat flesh and to drink blood? What would the people around you say if you told them, well, this Sunday I'm going to meet together with a couple of people that I call my brothers and sisters, and we're going to eat someone's flesh? And then we're going to drink their blood. They probably think you were crazy. You probably think you were crazy for even wording it in that way. Because sometimes we lose that symbolism. And it's not because the symbol is imperfect by any means. God's symbols are perfect. But it's because sometimes we lose those symbolisms. Because we hear it so much, or we just don't think about it in a clear enough manner at times. And same goes with the Passover. Of course, I doubt anyone in here has ever celebrated Passover. It'd be really interesting if you had, for whatever reasons. But I doubt anyone in here has ever probably celebrated the Jewish Passover before. But we've heard about it, right? I mean, since probably we were children in Bible class, how they would take the blood from the lamb and they would wipe it on their doorposts in celebration and commemoration of whenever the death angel passed over their home in Egypt. And it was a yearly thing. And every single year they would wipe the blood on the doorposts. And we've heard that for so long that I think sometimes we read this passage with Moses and it maybe loses its effectiveness to a certain point. Because you have to remember, this God wasn't telling Moses, hey, you know the Passover. You know the Passover celebration that we always celebrate? I want you to do that. No, there was no Passover celebration. The Passover celebration didn't exist yet because this was the first one. And so I can almost imagine God and Moses as God relays these instructions And he tells Moses, I want you to take blood, Moses. I want you to take blood from a lamb. I want you to smear it on your doorpost. And you can almost, it was Moses like, you want me to take what? Blood. I want you to take blood. I want you to smear it on the doorpost. Oh, and I'd like for you to be ready. Have your clothes on like you're fixing to go somewhere. Okay. And Moses is probably thinking, God. But Pharaoh has not let us leave any of the other times. So, I mean, you want me to have my shoes on like I'm ready to go and my coat on like I'm ready to go. But, I mean, nothing else has worked. But, okay. You know, I'll do that. And I can almost imagine the Egyptians in town as they see all of the Hebrew people taking this blood, killing all these animals and wiping blood everywhere on their doors and thinking, you know, what is that? I know we've seen some amazing signs, but what you really think your God is going to save you? He made you a slave. And here you are wiping blood on your door. They were okay looking unusual to the Egyptians. And again, you can almost imagine that night as they sat in their home and they ate the first ever Passover meal. They sat there in their clothes, ready to go, their bags packed. I've always wondered, could they hear the screams? Talks about in the scripture, the screams. Screams as the Egyptian families woke up. And it says every single house in Egypt had a dead person in it. Every single house. Mothers were waking up to find their children. Children were waking up to find one of their parents dead. And it says you could hear the screams throughout all of Egypt. And the Hebrew people, what did they do? They got up and they started walking. There's no sphinx for Moses in Egypt. Because Moses is not afraid to do the unusual things. If you're more afraid of what others will think than what God has asked you to do, you're not committed to it. I think we can probably all think about those people in our lives who we've always wanted to maybe share the message with. We've always wanted to share the gospel with. Maybe it's a parent, maybe it's your best friend in this whole world, and you've just never had the courage to share the gospel with them. Maybe it's a child who's gone astray. Whatever it may be, we all have those people in our lives that we wish we were more courageous about. But why don't we do it? Well, because of this principle here. Why don't we do it? Because, well, we're afraid oftentimes that, well, what if I look unusual to them? What if I look strange? What if they think I'm weird? I mean, at least I may have not have them in a saved relationship, but at least we have a relationship, so that's something. I don't want to ruin that. But we have to be okay looking strange to people. Isn't that the entire purpose of Christianity? Even in the Old Testament, wasn't that the entire purpose of Judaism? To look strange to the world. Do you look strange to the world? Or if you compare yourself to the world, you look just like it. There's a problem with one of those things. So I urge you to put yourself in your Moses skin. Consider what Moses gave up, what he was willing to give up. He gave up riches, he gave up fame, he gave up monuments, he gave up pyramids, and he was forgotten in all of Egyptian history. He willingly traded it all for a reward in what he calls an invisible realm. He cashed it in. Every last penny he cashed it in for a relationship with God. He was willing to give it all. But here's the kicker. What Moses lost, all of those things that Moses lost, they couldn't be taken with him. You see, Moses died alone and was buried on the peak of Mount Pisgah, by himself in an unmarked grave where we still don't know where he was. Still to this day, we have no idea where his body was buried. None of those things can go with him. You see, all those riches, all the fame, the fortune, the houses, the pyramids, those pyramids have stood for a long time. But those pyramids are going to be made up of the exact same thing that Moses' body will be made up of in the end times, and that's dust. They came from dust, and they will return to dust. All of it will return to dust. But what he gained, what Moses gained in the spiritual realm, he'll never lose again. You see, he traded these faux riches of earth for true riches on the other side of eternity. What would we be willing to put a price on our souls for? Jesus summed it up wisely in Mark 8:36. He said, "What does it profit a man to gain the whole world, but to lose his soul?" I think if I had $1 million, and I said, "Who would trade in their soul for $1 million?" I doubt I'd have any takers here. If I even said $100 million, I doubt I'd have any takers for their soul for $100 million. But maybe that's because that's just a bad way to value a soul, because we don't see souls lost to those things. What would a man give in exchange for his soul? Well, maybe the loss of your dream job. Maybe you come home tonight and you realize that your house is on fire and it burns absolutely to the ground and you lose everything in it. Just to call your insurance agent to find out that, you didn't have any insurance. Just to turn on the news one day to find out that your retirement fund, that you had worked your entire life and you're a year away from retirement or 5 years into retirement, and you turn on the news and you say, "I think that's the retirement fund that I have my money in." And you realize that one of the investors had embezzled every penny that you ever saved. You have nothing. Maybe you realize, you go to the doctor and you realize that your health isn't lasting like you thought it was going to last. And you think, "This isn't how I saw life turning out." Maybe you lose a spouse. And you have to live out the rest of your life without your spouse. You lose a child. You think, "This isn't the way, God, that I thought life was going to turn out. This isn't how I thought it was going to be if I followed you." But you see, God never said Christianity would not cost you anything. On the contrary, he said that Christianity would cost you everything. And those are the people that he calls us to be tonight. Would you be willing to keep your faith? Would you be able to keep your faith if you lost it all today, like Moses lost it all? Not saying it would be easy, not saying there wouldn't be struggles that we would go through, but would you keep your faith through it? You have to answer that question now. And God bless the people that have gone through those things and have kept their faith. Because what a hard thing those things are to lose and to go through in life. That pain is real and it is deep. But one thing is for sure, the reward that we have on the other side is worth it all. It's worth all the struggle. God never said Christianity wouldn't cost you anything. He said it'd cost you everything. Will you refuse, like Moses, to live around sin? Will you agree to leave comfort, to live for God wherever he sends you? Will you be willing to do the unusual? You know, Moses put that blood on the doorposts. Maybe tonight, would you be willing to dip your body into the water to wash away the blood? We're going to have an invitation song in just a second. Maybe you've been struggling with sin or whatever it is in your life, and you think, I want the prayers of our family here. I'd love to have the prayers of our family as I struggle through this. I want them to help me struggle through it. Or maybe you haven't put on the Lord in baptism yet. Let me tell you, there is no better night than tonight to be baptized. If tonight is the night, please come forward as together we stand and sing.